Hello there, sex fans. Welcome back. Today is Monday, September 27th, 2010, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge.
Mr. Larrabee, it's a privilege to meet you. I'm Dr. Howard Bannister.
Well, Howard, you got a few things wrong there. I'm not Mr. Larrabee. I am your host, that savagely scintillating sexologist, Dr. Dick. Doesn't this music give you happy feet? It sure does for me. And speaking of happy, my little gray cells are all aflutter because the extremely talented author, editor, and teacher M. Christian is back with us for another edition of the Erotic Mind podcast series.
Dr. Bannister.
No, he's over there. But wait, you didn't miss part one of our conversation that appeared here last week at this time, did you? Well, don't worry if you did, because you can find it and all of my podcasts in the podcast archive on my site, drdicksexadvice.com. Look for the site's search function. In the header, type in podcast number 231, and voila! But don't forget to use the pound sign when you do your search. As a special treat, M. Christian will share a delectable morsel of the fruit of his erotic mind. Be warned, it's all about a vibrator and someone's naughty parts.
My heart is going a mile a minute. Why, you can just feel it pounding. Can't you feel it?
Yes, that M. Christian has the same effect on me. And look for all things M. Christian on his site, mchristian.com. And from there, you can link to his other sites as well. Today's program is brought to you by So Hard for Men. So Hard is what we in the business lovingly call a boner pill. But So Hard for Men is not just any old Viagra knockoff, no siree. It's a pure, all-natural, herbal formula that improves sexual health, combats erectile dysfunction, and increases the strength of your erection when aroused.
And you accuse me of oversimplifying. I never oversimplify.
Neither do I. Listen, I've tried So Hard for Men, so I can testify to its effectiveness. Look for my review of So Hard for Men on my product review site, drdicksextoyreviews.com. Use the site's search function, type in the keyword herbal, and you can read my comments and evaluation. The makers of So Hard for Men are so confident that their product works that they offer a 100% money-back guarantee. They also proudly offer their first-time customers a free, no-obligation trial pack. This is an amazing opportunity to test this product on your own.
You're upside down.
No, I'm not. Get your wood the natural way. Look for their handsome banner in the sidebar of my site, drdicksexadvice.com. You will be so glad you did. Okay, on with the show. Christian, welcome back, and thank you again for joining us. I sure appreciate you taking more time with us because you are a fascinating guy.
Oh, thank you so much.
And I love your websites because they're titillating, as it were, so to speak. So, let's pick up where we left off last week. You were telling us a little bit about your background and writing as a kid and when the erotic stuff began to happen in your work. And do most of the people in your life know about you writing erotica?
Some do. I'm actually a fairly private person, mainly because I don't know how people are going to react to it. I'm actually very proud of what I do, but at the same time, I don't want to necessarily... You know, like, I don't tell my boss, I don't tell a lot of people, because I go there. When anybody asks, it depends on what they do. I mean, it's really funny, because if someone asks, and I don't know them, I say I'm a writer. If I know them fairly well, I say I write a lot of things, including smut. And if I know them very well, I say I'm a pornographer. Mm-hmm. But it really depends on who the person is. I also think it's like, I don't know, I mean, it's kind of like I don't want to make them uncomfortable.
Right.
I have no problem with it, because I'm out there all over the place. In fact, my site has, you know, I don't like... have different pseudonyms for my non-smut and my smut. It's all the same M. Christian name.
That's an interesting kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. In fact, it was funny. It's like, I actually talked to a couple of agents and editors and so forth. I said, you know, if you want me to use a different name, I said, no, that's your name's known for. So I was like, fine, I have no problem with that. Good. And I'm also one of those people, I'm proud of what I do.
Rightfully so. Yeah, absolutely.
It's kind of weird, but it's every once in a while when I do edit an anthology and I'm working with a writer and they say, oh yeah, I have this name for my porn and this name for my real stuff. It's like, wait a minute. You know, it doesn't make me annoyed, but it makes me kind of question them a bit. It's like, you know, you're not proud of what you're doing when you're doing my books, but you're proud of something you're doing for somebody else's books. No, it's like, you know, I'm always who I am. I mean, it's I'm a writer, and a writer writes what they want to write or what the market wants them to write, and that's philosophy.
So as you know, my primary reason for doing this series of interviews is to uncover something of the creative process.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to ask, are you living the life of a full-time sexual athlete? And it's not what sparks the images that become your erotica.
Well, it's funny, because like, once again, it's like, even though I'm an erotica writer, I really find myself being more of a writer than an erotica writer, per se. I just like telling stories. I've always done it. I think probably after high school, when I decided to become, or try to become, a writer, I sort of like started to train myself. This is also interesting because when I teach my classes in writing, I always teach this too, that, you know, it's like imagination is a muscle. It's like anything else. If you don't exercise it, it doesn't work. So I find myself playing games constantly, and sometimes it pans out and a story will emerge and sometimes it won't, where I'll do things like, you know, read a book and stop halfway through and finish it within my own, you know, in my own mind. Or I'll watch a movie and, you know, try and fix it, how would I make it better, or something similar. So after a point, your mind gets more and more used to this kind of thinking. I'm always kind of playing games with myself. Like, I'll challenge myself to write an episode of a TV series, or visualize a sequel to a book, or tell a book from a different point of view, or imagine the characters, you know, 5 years after the story, or something similar. So it's become like it's a constant thing. So now when I get a call for submissions, or I talk to a publisher or an editor, and they say, okay, we want, you know, like, I'll use an example of one of my my own anthologies, a pirate one. Instantly, I start thinking of like dozens of different ideas, and then I just got to decide what I want to do, because my mind just sort of moves in that direction. It can be a little frustrating sometimes, especially when I'm trying to sleep, because my mind's going all over the place. But like I said, it's just kind of like this exercise I do, and I think, you know, once again, creativity is creativity. I actually don't base my fiction on myself all that much. I mean, I put my own mental landscape in there.
Right.
That is very common. I mean, you know, even though I might be writing about a sexuality I have no experience with whatsoever, I am really writing about my own emotional self.
Right.
But the details, I rarely put things in there, just because I think, I don't know, I'd like to be more imaginative than less, so I very often will try and step away from myself as much as possible, because I want to imagine somebody else's life. I know what mine's like. I mean,
yeah. So,
I want to write about the same stuff I'm living every day. I prefer to write about something more exotic and different and interesting.
Right. So if you're not a sexual athlete, and interestingly enough, no one has ever answered that question going, yeah, I am. So would you say that you study people then?
Oh, yes.
I mean, that would be the basis for your ability to create these humans on the page.
Absolutely. In fact,
and sometimes probably not even humans, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I do love that. That is a little hobby of mine. I'm always trying to understand people. I've always thought that if I wasn't a writer, I'd love to become a scientist studying human behavior. I think it's fascinating. Mm-hmm. And then it's actually kind of scary sometimes. But at the same time, I think it's really, really interesting to try to understand what motivates people. And I think that's something I'd like to really play with. And that's something in a lot of the books I've written and a lot of stories I've written, because I love to experiment with, you know, why do people act this way? What's our behavior? I'm not one of those people who believes that human beings are perfect, shiny, little, happy creatures. I think we are all, you know, wonderfully weird, warped, strange, and, you know, in some ways broken, but that's just what makes us human. So I like to play with that, and that's a lot of fun. It can be challenging sometimes, but it's also just, I really enjoy getting into there and trying to understand it. That's why sometimes my stories are a little dark, and it's funny, because someone actually accused me of writing, like, very, very, you know, dark stories, and I don't feel like when I'm writing them.
Yeah.
But sometimes they just come out that way.
Right. So would you read for us again?
Sure. Let me pull up a story here really quickly. And this one actually is from a book called Rude Mechanicals, which is a collection I have from Renaissance eBooks. It's a wonderful little collection of some of my stories. And this is called I Am Joe's Vibrator.
I love it.
And this story actually has a funny little legacy. It's actually originally was published in Carol Queen's 5-Minute Erotica Volume 2. Mm-hmm. And it's told from the point of view of a vibrator. Mm-hmm. And it's actually, and this is sort of unfortunately dates me, but if you ever seen those embarrassing Reader's Digest, I am both spleen. This is what this is based on. Okay, here we go. For a few days after my sale to Joe and Patrick, I felt that my purpose was going to be unappreciated as, still wrapped in brown paper, I was exiled to the bottom of an overstuffed suitcase. This puzzled me because while I noted a certain discomfort from Patrick as he lifted me off a shelf and laughed at my bunny in beads, I also noticed a special twinkle in Joe's very curious eyes. A day or so and several hundred miles later, I was pleasantly surprised when my darkness was pulled away, revealing those same sparkling green eyes. "Come on, let's try it," Joe said. Batteries were inserted into my control box, and with a slide of one of my switches, she giggled almost hysterically. Patrick, though, grinned and was obviously less enamored of me than his girlfriend. It was at that moment, she laughing, he smiling, but tense, that I decided I would be Joe's vibrator. "Here," she said, joy never leaving her lips as she slipped off her t-shirt. "Touch me with it." Reaching down, she cupped a small but beautifully perky breast, pointing a dark, rosy nipple out at him. Cautiously, he reached out with me, grazing the hardened knot with my gently buzzing head. At the contact, she squealed delightfully and jumped back a bit, palms sliding between plastic and her breast. "Oh, I'm sorry," he said, turning me off. "No, no, just a shock, that's all. Try it again." Her voice was rich and throaty, a warm purr. Hand away, she pulled her shoulder back, enthusiastically offering both her breasts. And that's probably a little taste of that story.
I love it. Love it. I love those tantalizing. Now we have to run right out and buy the book to find the rest of it. I love it. I love it. I love it. So, is writing for a female audience different from writing for a male audience, or do you even have that mindset when you are creating?
It's very weird. It's just, I've often thought about that, and I think internally I might feel a little something, but universally it really isn't. I know some of my writer buddies always say, oh yeah, if I write for a guy, I make it more action-packed and grindy and something similar, or when I'm writing for a woman, it's more romantic. I just kind of write. I think it's, you know, sometimes I think it's also a little bit of a disservice to kind of think that way, even though probably unconsciously I do it to a certain extent, because I think, you know, everybody's who they are. I mean, it's like you're going to have men and women who run the range of emotional and needs as far as the story goes. So I just sort of like to write the stories. I think sometimes, I don't know, I like to play, I think, a little bit more with gay characters. I'm not too sure why. I think because for me, being a straight guy, it sort of like gives me a new place to play, a new place to try and understand and, you know, have that interesting experience of trying to understand. But I think it's also just also the market. I mean, I've written for a number of places, and I have happened to sell a lot of gay and lesbian stories. So I think that's part of it, too. It's kind of like following the money kind of thing.
Well, it's wonderful that you're able to do that. I mean, I'm not sure that I could. Well, first of all, I'm not a writer, so that's one thing. But I don't know. I think I would get balled up in, no pun intended, in the mechanics, or, you know, find that, you know, that's where the stumbling block would be for me. But it's interesting, because it seems to me that if we allow ourselves to, we talked about this a little bit last week, if we allow ourselves just to understand who we are, mm-hmm. and I mean, it's not such a difficult thing to project beyond, and maybe that's why, you know, things are so difficult about sexuality for so many people, is that they don't know how to do that. You know, that, you know, like, how, you know, what do gay people do together? Like, well, what do straight people do together?
You exactly.
Know? And exactly. So, you know, it's not such a huge leap like we imagine, mm-hmm. or some of us imagine. It's just humans being human together.
You're exactly correct. You're completely spot on again. I tell you, this is wonderful, because you're saying exactly what I say all the time. It's like, you know, there's more things in common than there is separate.
Exactly.
And, you know, when I think about, you know, a gay or a lesbian or whatever, fill in the blank, sexuality, my first reaction is think about my own sexuality. And sexuality is not divorced from life. Sexuality is based on life. I mean, yes, you might fantasize about that person, but you also fantasize about holding hands and walking on the beach or going to a nice little restaurant or whatever. I mean, fill in the blank. But it's like sexuality is life. It's not separate. Right. And the mechanics is just mechanics. I mean, it's like, you know, you can, you know, a little bit of research on that one. Every once in a while, I read a writer's work who's focusing way much on the mechanics. It's like, no, it's not the bumpy grindy. It's the emotion. It's the you know, the commonalities we all feel. I mean, we all know that, you know, sex is not porn movies. Sex is a little bit of wonder, a little bit of disappointment, a little bit of hope, a little bit of frustration. It's all those things mixed in together, and that's what it means for everybody, mm-hmm. no matter what your orientation or fetish is.
Right. Do you have a writing ritual or routine, and how do you get warmed up to write? Touch yourself impurely, perhaps? That's how I get warmed up for these interviews, don't you know?
You do too much information.
Yay!
it's very interesting because it's like I had a chat recently with one of my other writer friends, and they said they only know when their stories are good is when they get turned on. It's like, I never get turned on when I write my erotica because I'm actually in my head. I'm actually concentrating more on story and structure and rhythm and all this kind of stuff. So half the time I forget what I'm writing about. Right. You know, I'll sit there and go, that came out really well, and I just wrote about, oh, my God. But it's funny. I'm actually very, very professional in that realm. I'm not tooting my horn, but I don't believe in the muse. I don't believe in inspiration. I believe work. Mm-hmm. So when someone tells me, you know, we need you a story for, you know, cowboy erotica, or we need a story for like the book I'm doing on the undead, so my mind starts racing in that direction. I get excited about the story. I want to tell an interesting story. Mm-hmm. And I instantly sort of like also know in the back of my head that I have to do it within a certain amount of time. I rarely finish a whole story at one sitting. I often take like 2 or 3 nights to do it. Mm-hmm. And novels usually take about 6 months, depending on what my life is like. Mm-hmm. But it's just kind of like that in the back of my mind, I already have the calendar filled in. Like, I know I have to get this chapter done by now, so forth. And so I'm always kind of like very pushed that way. I don't believe in waiting for things to happen. Sometimes you have to push your way through it.
Is there an arc of how do I want to, like a sexual arc in your work, either short story or novel, where it kind of corresponds to the sexual response cycle of arousal and plateau and orgasm and resolution kind of thing?
To a certain extent. I try and mix it up a little bit, though, because I think sometimes if it's too predictable, then you can know exactly what's going to happen.
Right.
It also depends what the market is for the book. Like Painted Doll was originally written as an erotic novel. It's a science fiction, cyberpunk kind of thing. So I had to put a good amount of sex in it. Other books, like Bloody Marys, only has, I think, like maybe one quasi-sex scene in it, because I actually wanted to write something that was going to be received as more of a, you know, quasi-mainstream book, even though it's about a gay vampire. It depends on what I'm trying to do with the book and what I'm trying to do with the story. Sometimes it's like, you know, the sex is less sex than it is a contact. Mm-hmm. A meeting between people.
Right.
That the story itself, you know, is almost could function without it. I don't necessarily feel like it's been crammed in there necessarily, which is an odd image. But just the idea that the story is actually more important than it is. And sometimes I kind of mix it up a little bit. I always tell people that sometimes the most powerful sexuality is not sex.
Right.
And we've experienced that many times. I mean, every human being has, where sometimes you'll get slapped upside the head by something that you never in a million years would find erotic, but it wasn't immediate arousal, but rather it's kind of like a tantalizing whisper, a fleeting contact. You know, sex can be in all kinds of different things. I try and put that often in my stories and try and stay away too much from the shopping list of sex. You know, when I do teach my classes, I tell people, you know, sex is not A, B, C, D, E, roll over and go to sleep. It can be E, then C, then B, then D. You can start with the sex and end without it, or saying somebody have to have an orgasm.
Right.
You don't have to have sex. You don't have to have the entire shopping list. I mean, it's like, I mean, we all seen the porn clips. It's like they always start with one, go to the other, and then this conclusion. It's like, that's boring. You know, mix up a little bit. Try and just saying different. Like, you know, human sex is not perfect. I mean, we all can have sexual experiences in our own lives where the sex was incredibly powerful, but no one came, or
that's right,
it happened, or, you know, it was just a tease, or it was just a thought, or maybe it's the fantasy that never actually occurred, but it's still one of those things that keeps you going. But, you know, that's human. That's you know, and I think if you start to follow a shopping list, then you're going to sort of like, one, it's you're doing yourself a disservice as a writer because you're being lazy, and you're sort of insulting your reader that you're just writing porn, you know, versus trying to write.
Right. Which is a perfect segue to, you know, the next area of questioning that I would like to move to, and that is that the distinction is often made between erotica and pornography.
Mm-hmm.
And in your opinion, is there a fundamental difference between the two forms of expression? And if so, where does the difference lie?
I actually sort of use them interchangeably.
Uh-huh.
And my reasoning is that there really isn't a difference, and I think it kind of does a disservice to the literary world, so to speak, when they try and do this. And I always try and make this as concise as possible, and unfortunately I always end up kind of, you know, whinging on a little bit. But I think my problem with it is if we start to draw lines in the sand as writers, say, what I write is erotica, what you write is pornography.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one, it's arrogant. Two, there is no definition. You can't point to the number of words. And I've heard silly explanations like, you know, erotica is more than just sex, pornography is only sex. Well, it depends on what you mean by sex. And
that's
it means,
right.
By, you know, I've read stories that were incredibly touching that were nothing but sex. I mean, it's just the way the writing is handled.
Mm-hmm.
So if we start to draw lines in the sand and we allow those lines to be drawn, they can be used against us.
Mm-hmm.
Because then you're going to have someone saying, no, no, you know, literature is this, erotica is this. And then suddenly you're on the other side of the fence.
And besides, there's always going to be somebody who is going to be slightly to one's right or to one's left, and who's going to say, "Oh no,
mm-hmm.
you know, your stuff is this, and mm-hmm. my stuff is this,
exactly.
and the good stuff, and your stuff is the bad stuff."
Mm-hmm.
And you know, which gets me to another question is, you know, have you ever been denigrated for the work that you produce? As people say, "Oh, you're so talented. What is it with, you know, all the smut?"
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Oh yeah, this is very common. And luckily, I think most people, when they actually step into the world of writing, are actually more responsive to the fact that you're a published author versus whatever you write, and that's actually changed quite a bit. It used to be a lot more, if you wrote smut, you actually would just stay in the closet and don't come out again. Now that's mm-hmm. completely changed. But yeah, they definitely get it sometimes, mostly from people who aren't writers, mostly from people who are, you know, like, you know, the typical advice, oh, you should write a screenplay. It's like, thank you very much. Or you should, you know, you should be writing for this show or this, mm-hmm. this, you know, Dennis, you know, this author, you know, gets a huge award and a huge advance. You should be doing that kind of stuff. But for people who are actually writers, it rarely comes up because they understand that what you do. I mean, it's actually really funny. Someone actually said to me once, you know, why don't you try writing for these other publications? I do. I mean, I actually have a pretty good success writing for other things. I'm never going to try for the New Yorker. That's kind of silly. But at the same time, I've gotten nonfiction, science fiction, fantasy, horror, fill in the blank, romance. I've sold all that kind of stuff. But it's interesting, when I put up my call for submissions, very often I'll get submissions from writers who, you know, have the same attitude I have. I mean, this person might be a huge award-winning author, and they just need a buck, and they're going to write a story. And
that's
it
right.
happens quite a bit. It's like...
Right.
Kind of goes both ways. I think writers are kind of notorious for whatever the opportunities are. I mean, there's famous stories about, you know, writers who think, you know, don't need the money, who are writing under different five or six different pseudonyms for a lot of porn or a lot of weird stuff or true life stories or whatever. I mean, you write what, you know, people want.
Are you compelled to write, do you suppose?
I think it's wired into my brain now.
I've
thought several times about not retiring, but just kind of taking a break, and I just don't think I can. I think it's one of those things, that game I talked about earlier of mm-hmm. constantly stretching my imagination is there, and I find myself actually getting not sexually turned on, but creatively turned on by
right.
my idea, and
right,
I just
right,
can't
right.
get rid of it. I have, like, you know, dozens, if not hundreds, of ideas floating in my head at any time, and I'll just pull them out and start working on it, like, you know, a horror story or science fiction or a mystery or whatever, or an erotica story or something similar. And I also get really turned on by a challenge. I love that attitude. It's like, you know, I've had people tell me, oh, write the book you've always wanted to write. It's like, yeah, I have a lot of those, but at the same time, I really like a challenge. I like someone to tell me, okay, we need blank, 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 blank. It's like, okay, I'm there. And then get the juices going,
mm-hmm.
play around with it, have fun with it, and go from there. So, yeah, I think compulsive is pretty close. The actual physical writing is harder.
Yes.
But the creativity never goes away.
Yeah, right. Well, you know, in my conversations with other artists for this series, again, both literary and visual, they feel like if somebody took their pen and paper away or their computer away or their crayons or their colored pencils or whatever, they would go to pieces.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just like...
Mm-hmm.
I need to have this. This is an outlet for me. This is what makes me me. And to not be able to do that, they would be hard-pressed.
Oh, I completely agree. And I do think that a true creative person will always find a creative outlet. Mm-hmm. There will always be a way of getting it out there.
You'll be scratching stuff on your cell wall.
On the padded room wall. But,
exactly.
I definitely think that. I think if you're creative, you're creative. That's all there is to it. I've had that conversation a lot with people. It's just like, if you're an artist, you're an artist. If you're a writer, you're a writer. You're creative, you're creative. It's always going to find a way out. In fact, sometimes I play with other things just because sometimes writing is too much in your head and too much, it's not physical. Mm-hmm. So I'll pull like art supplies and just play with that, or clay or something like that. I need something tactile.
Right.
But yeah, creativity is always going to be there. If you are a creative person and you've developed that facility in your mind by practice and play, it's never going to go away. I think it's going to pop up in all kinds of weird places. And I think it's wonderful. I mean, that's why I'm the one thing I do teach in my classes, and the one thing I do talk about when I write about writing, is creativity. That's the biggest thing you need to develop, is creativity, and just letting go of the inner critic and just having fun. If you're not having fun, it's not right. You're not doing it correctly.
Interesting. Good. Are there topics that you gravitate toward, topics that you avoid?
Well, like I said, I'm kind of a literary streetwalker, and then I'm very pragmatic around my fiction. I usually prefer to know where it's going to go before I write it, because I have a hard time writing something not knowing where it's going to go or it's going to be published. That's changed now because the whole ebook revolution now, it's actually pretty easy to sell things now. Getting your name out is hard. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you can pretty much write what you want to write. But I usually stay away from things that are going to get me automatically bounced, so to speak. I like to say there's four deadly sins of erotica writing. Now, this has changed now, like I said, because ebook publishers are being much more daring. But I rarely write about underage characters. I rarely write about incest. I rarely write about excessive violence. I've written some pretty brutal stories sometimes, and I don't write about what's the four deadly sins? Incest, underage, bestiality. So that's the four deadly sins. But at the same time, it's like, I usually write because I want to tell a story. I mean, something is very interested in the story. I mean, it's like Bloody Marys, for instance, my gay vampire book. I wanted to write. First of all, I had a really blast writing it. It was one of those books that just sort of poured out of me, which is not always a good thing for my poor copy editors. But at the same time, I wanted to write a book about, start from the beginning. It's like I wanted to write a vampire that was had all the drawbacks but none of the advantages. I'm so tired of reading about the count with the flowing cape and the handsome looks and the power of the night. And so this poor guy is 200 years old. He's can't go out during the daytime. Obviously, he's kind of a schlub. His heart's in the right place, but he's kind of a poor put upon guy. And it's it was a lot of fun. I mean, especially since my reinterpretation of it. So that's why I like to write these things. I get an idea in my head. Painted Doll was basically my take on different identities. It's basically about someone who has to assume a persona to hide. And I love the idea that we are basically many people within ourselves. And sometimes those personalities or those selves, like the vocal self, the public self, the private self, can sometimes be in conflict with each other. And that was a lot of fun to explore. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of my motivation for writing half the time, is me actually having fun with an idea or a concept and seeing how it goes. And because I sort of want to share it with people. I want to say, look at this cool thing I thought of.
How cool. So what do you look for in the erotica of other folks?
Well, when I'm editing a book, the one thing I don't look for is sex. Believe it or not. Obviously, if I'm doing a book for a gay publisher, I obviously can't have a straight story. But usually what I'm looking for is something that says something. I want a story in one of the books I'm editing to actually be memorable, and not just because of the mechanics of the sexuality. I want something that where it makes people say, but listen, you say something. I mean, that sounds like a broken record, but my most common rejection to myself, not to the person actually writing the story, is just porn. Mm-hmm. If I read a story, and that was just, two people meeting, they screw, they go on from there. That's not interesting. I don't really want, what are you saying? You're saying nothing. Mm-hmm. I want stories also to kind of stretch things a bit. I mean, if I write a book, but for instance, if I'm editing a book, let's say, for instance, The Undead. Okay, that's the one book I'm doing right now. And once again, the rule for the book is no vampires. Now, there are probably going to be a couple of vampires because we can't avoid that. But I just want to get someone turning in like 5,000 vampire stories. It's like, be imaginative. Give me something different. Give me something unique. It can mean anything. It can mean ghosts. It can be golems. It could be zombies. It could be all kinds of different. And there's different kinds of death.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we always think of these stories ideas sometimes with just this really obvious thing. I mean, you know, people die inside.
Right.
You know,
why could
you,
so true.
You know, there's all kinds of different forms of death. There's different kinds of ways that we pass on. There's different kind of things that live beyond their span. Don't think obviously the simple stuff. Pirates are the same way. I mean, yes, I some classic, you know, Raphael Sabatini pirate stories, but I want, you know, software pirates. I want, you know.
Exactly. How cool.
You know, I want space pirates. I want parodies. I want silly. I want really serious. I mean, that's the thing. Stretch. You know, try something different. Say something.
Mm-hmm.
I think the biggest insult I think a writer can give both an editor as well as an audience is don't try.
Mm-hmm.
They phone it in. I give these stories, and I'm always a very polite editor. In fact, I'm overly polite. But some of these stories I want to tell them, it's like, you know, you took, you know, 20 minutes to write this thing. You're probably laughing at the fact, oh, we wrote a porn story. It's like, you know, that's insulting. You know, tell me a story you'd be proud of. I mean, if you took the sex out, if you could read this to a room of your friends and be proud of it, that's the story I want to buy.
Yeah.
And that's the story I want to read.
Right. And with that, sir, I must say that our time is up. I could go on and on because you are so charming and so delightful to chat with.
I've had a delightful time.
But before we go, your website address again, your main one, and then we can find your other ones through that, right?
Yes, exactly. My main one is mchristian.com. It's a redirect to my Blogspot page.
Okay.
I have links all over that to all of my books. I have an Amazon list that's on there too. And there's also links to Monica Klein and Frequently Felt, as well as every other writer's site I'm on right now. So that's definitely the good gateway to go to, because all my books are up there.
And then we can buy your books through there, right?
Exactly.
Okay,
exactly.
Cool. Excellent. Good. Well, thank you, Christian, for being so generous with your precious time. We are all the richer for the experience.
It was absolutely a wonderful time. I thoroughly enjoyed myself.
And until we speak again, we will be seeing you in cyberspace.
Great. And feel free to write me anytime, folks. My email addresses are all over my website.
Thanks, Christian. Be well.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
What a great show, huh? Well, that's it for today, sex fans. Tune in next week for more sex advice with an edge with your host, me, Dr. Dick. Again, this week's podcast sponsor is So Hard for Men. I know what you're thinking. With so many herbal supplements on the market that boast fast-acting results, it's hard to know which erection-enhancing formula to choose, or if one should just avoid them altogether. I always tell my clients to beware of bogus claims and dangerously adulterated products that abound in the marketplace.
Your fiancé was just telling us about your most incredible adventure in the sky.
She was? Well, I was just about to tell you how So Hard for Men is different. It's made of 100% herbal extracts. It's as effective as any medically prescribed drugs I've tested, but it's much more kind to my system. There are no headaches, unsightly flushes, upset stomach, rise in blood pressure, or altered vision. In my years-long search for the holy grail of herbal erection enhancers, I have found only one product that consistently delivers on the promises it makes without any of the nasty side effects. So Hard for Men improves genital blood circulation, which assists in achieving and sustaining a strong erection.
You!
Don't get so excited. All I want to say is that every human body is unique, and each of us metabolizes what we consume in a slightly different way, so keep that in mind when you use So Hard. And just so that we're clear, So Hard is not miraculous. It's not going to override an unhealthy lifestyle, but it can positively affect our sexual response cycle, making us more easily aroused as well as more energetic lovers. So look for the So Hard banner in the sidebar of DrDickSexAdvice.com. Say, would you like to become a sponsor for one or more of my sex advice podcasts? As you know, I plug a product or service at the beginning and end of each show, just like I did there. Each podcast has its own posting on my site, along with the name of the product sponsor and a banner for the product or service. The beauty part about this unique opportunity is that once a sponsor's ad is included in a particular podcast, that sponsor is embedded there forever. Your sponsorship also underscores your social conscience. Your marketing dollars will not only go to promote your product, you'll be able to do so while you're helping to disseminate badly needed sex education and sexual enrichment messages. Simply put, you just can't get a better bang for your advertising buck. For further information, contact me at drdicksexadvice.com. Until next week, remember, sex is good. And good sex? Why, that's even better. Over and out.